Coming up on Hear Me Out, did you celebrate Earth Day this week, or maybe Earth Month? How much do you know about what to recycle?
So we actually have paper in the paper. We have a Coke bottle in the plastic. And aluminum cans in the aluminum. Look at that.
Also, the late Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson founded Earth Day in 1970. But years earlier, his ideas got a boost from this man.
Lake Superior, the Apostle Islands, the Bad River area are all unique. Lake Superior has a beauty that millions can enjoy.
All that and more after this. Welcome to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. Did you attend an Earth Day celebration earlier this week?
Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming out and celebrating Earth Day with us here at the Duluth Art Institute.
Full disclosure, I went to that one because I'm on the Art Institute board. But maybe you're observing the entire month of April as Earth Month, or striving to do the right thing for the environment all year round. One thing everyone can do is reduce waste, both by limiting the products and resources we use in the first place and doing what we can to make sure what we put in that recycle bin doesn't end up in the landfill and really gets recycled. Our first guests are working to do just that. With me in the studio is Jamie Harvey of Duluth. He's nationally recognized for his work in the intersection of health, healthcare, community, and the environment. He's the volunteer coordinator of Bag It Duluth. And talking to us from Culver City, California, is Susan Collins. She's president of the Container Recycling Institute. The Institute has as its mission the goal of making North America a global model for the collection and quality recycling of packaging materials. Welcome, Jamie and Susan.
Great to be here, Robin.
Thank you.
I want to start with Susan. I emphasize the words quality recycling. Tell us what quality recycling is as opposed to regular recycling.
Sure. Well, quality recycling is when we can use an item that is clean enough to go back into a manufactured product again. It's where we do things like turn an old aluminum can into a new aluminum can, turn an old glass bottle into a new glass bottle through proper recycling that achieves really high collection rates and really high quality rates.
In other words, you're wanting to get this really good material, right? I mean, we're not talking about recycling junk. We're talking about some very good plastics that are actually worth something.
Right. And so when we don't have good quality, when we have contamination or cross-contamination, and when I say cross-contamination, it's sometimes perfectly good recyclables. They just end up in the wrong load because they don't get sorted properly. So if we have something like an aluminum can that ends up in a paper bale, the process that it goes through to be filtered out is going to take out the aluminum can, but it's also going to take out some perfectly good paper fiber with it, which I call collateral damage. And then that aluminum can with the paper fiber stuck all over it is going to go to the landfill. So it's sort of a triple tragedy. It's a tragedy for the person who put the aluminum can in the recycling bin and wanted it recycled. It's a tragedy for the aluminum industry who wanted their can back so that they could recycle it. And it's also a tragedy for the paper mill who has these extra costs of cleaning out unnecessary materials.
And all this came from me doing what I thought was the right thing, right? Because I put it in the bin and somebody at some recycling agency said, that's okay, a single stream, just throw everything in the bin.
Right. We see an awful lot of that happening. The single stream process is one that takes a bunch of materials and puts them all in one bin to be recycled, but they generally pick up from hundreds of households in a single day, and along the route, they have to compact the materials together over and over and over in order to fit hundreds of households worth of materials in one truck. And with all of that squishing material together, it's just inevitable that the glass will break and little glass shards will get mixed in with the paper and plastic. And some of the glass will break so that it's too small to ever be sorted properly. Every single material type that you can think of has some mixture of other materials mixed in.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that with our next guest following this segment. We'll be talking to Karen Anderson from WLSSD. Jamie Harvey, you have a program, Bag It Duluth. What's wrong with going to the store and getting a plastic bag and put it in a recycle bin? What's wrong with that?
Well, there's a couple of things that I would offer. I don't know if it's wrong, but what we're seeing...
You can say wrong.
No, I don't like using the word wrong because it makes it feel as though there's right and wrong, right? And that there's black and white and we live in a binary world and we don't live in a binary world. What we're starting to realize, especially with climate change, is that we are having to start to recognize that we have to live within ecological boundaries. We're seeing that with plastics in the ocean. And so your example doesn't really provide the bigger context of some of these broader issues.
Well, let me back you up, though. If I have a plastic bag, there is the place at the store that says, right, bring the bags back here.
So those bins are often, they collect plastic. What we're learning is that more often than not, they are contaminated and then just thrown in the landfill. Thin film plastics are very difficult to recycle. But as well, there's sort of the bigger issue as well. An average grocery store goes through 1.5 million bags here in Duluth, 1.5 million bags a year, which are used maybe once, maybe a couple times if they use it for garbage and goes into the landfill. It just doesn't make sense. And so it gives us this sort of beautiful illusion that we're doing the right thing. And we should really start to be looking at how we reduce, reuse, and then recycle. So recycling is sort of that last option. And that's what I think we become a little misguided about. We're going to have to really start shifting our behavior and thinking about reduction.
On the front end.
On the front end, absolutely.
How does Bag It Duluth work?
So Bag It Duluth has a proposal before City Council, which is advocating for to put a fee on single-use carry-out bags, paper and plastic, because we know that these change behavior. People don't like to be, you know, punished. It would allow the stores to recover the cost of goods, which are the bags. It costs an average grocery store $60,000 to $100,000 a year with that amount of money. And we're not advocating that stores should do this. You could purchase 10 reusable bags for every citizen in our community. So it's illogical to keep using these bags, throwing them in landfills.
And by reusable bag, you mean the canvas bags?
A canvas bag or even a polypropylene bag that can be recycled, but that has recycled content in it, yes.
And the fee would be charged me, so if I don't... And by the way, people know, I spend a lot of time in Massachusetts, and Cambridge has this, Mass.
Boston just did this, and many cities around the country are doing many states, I'm
sorry,
around the country.
And how many pennies will it cost me for this bag?
It depends on whether the state or the your local municipality. So we're advocating a 5 or 10 cent, really it's up to the city councilor. So that's one of our goals. The other is to make straws available only on request. Again, how many straws do we need? And we're not going to debate about whether it should be, you know, paper, what type of plastic, whether it should be compostable. It's why don't we start thinking about whether we actually need them in the first place? And then the third is that we have to phase out styrofoam to-go containers. There are certain bad actors out there in the plastics world which just don't really make sense that we even have that they're in commerce. It just doesn't make sense.
So. Aha, I did get you to say something was bad. Okay. And Susan, you can jump in here in a minute, but here's my devil's advocate question. Or really not so much. I am going to be as free market as I possibly can to ask you, does it really make sense, though, to fine us for doing some bad behavior when, and here's the option, you could reward us for doing good behavior? So I went to Target right here in the Twin Ports, and I was surprised to find out that because I did bring a canvas bag, I got 5 cents rebate. Mount Royal does the same thing. Isn't that a better way of doing it?
Actually, it depends what your goal is. If you're actually trying to change behavior, it's not a good idea because behavioral economists will show you that actually that little stick will motivate people. And all it does is it takes about a week or two for that, you know, perceived punishment to be in place before people change their behavior.
Wait a minute. You're saying it's better to beat people than it is better to have...
It's perception. It's the same amount of money. 5 cents reward. Right. People don't change their behavior. You already brought the bag. It didn't change your behavior.
But here's the thing, and I'm going to challenge you one more, and then I'll shut up, and I'll let Susan respond to this, which is that Super One here doesn't do that. And I'm not saying anything bad about Super One, and they don't charge you for the bags either.
Right.
But half the time, I kid you not, that I come to the store, I have the canvas bag in the car, and I forget it until I get to the checkout. That no longer happens with me at Target. So maybe I'm just kind
of
weird.
Where you're an N of one or maybe an N of a few. But no, but that's exactly how those perceived punishment works. You're motivated. You're motivated to make the change. So that's why the Target reward works for you. But you're unique, Robin. but it's that small 5 cents that people want to avoid that will actually bring them back to the car, and then they're trained. And we see that from across the country and around the globe. And you look at across the United Kingdom, you look at Washington State, you look at California, where these fees have been put in place. You see 85% to 90% reduction in single use bag use. It's just dramatic.
Susan, what sort of experience have you had at the Institute?
Yeah, well, first of all, to follow up on fees versus rewards, it's actually our job here at the Container Recycling Institute to study that kind of thing and figure out what does work. We wrote a report on a nexus study for plastic bag fees or bans way back in 2008, I believe. And at that time, we gathered the best available research, and now there have been many dozens or hundreds of bag policies passed just in this country, if not around the world, and what has been proven to work the best is that fee. Interestingly, it's done a little bit differently when we look at beverage containers. With beverage containers, we now have 50 years of history of different programs around the world, and what works the best with beverage containers is putting a deposit on the beverage container on the front end. And then when consumers return the beverage container for recycling, they get the refund.
In certain states. In Minnesota, we don't have it. In Wisconsin, we don't have it. But we're right next to Upper Michigan. And I think there's a Seinfeld episode about running a truckload of bottles. And I'm tempted to do that to...
I would advise that you don't. Because
so darn, this was my retirement.
So in that case, the reward of getting your deposit back is an incredible incentive. If you set the deposit at the right level, you can have programs that get above 95% return rates. We've got several of those around the world that get those really high rates of return. So, you know, both mechanisms work for different products and different circumstances.
Okay. Jamie?
I'm with you there, Susan. And I think the other piece that it helps do, which you alluded to earlier on in your comments, is that it cleans up the recycling stream, because then you have those products that are taken out, and it helps sort of, again, clean up and make those products that might be being put in the collection bins and so forth. You know, it's how do we get these streams that can do broader contamination out?
And you said to me not to take those bottles back to Michigan. It's 10 cents a bottle. Why not?
Because it's breaking the law. You're only supposed to get a refund on the bottles on which you paid a deposit.
I don't think I can argue against breaking the law. Okay. So, Jamie, you brought a bin of some stuff here. What do we got?
Oh, we got a bunch of wish cycling here, right?
That's, wish cycling?
You know about wish cycling, right, Susan?
Yes.
Tell us.
So, well, we have here, it's our Organic Valley egg whites. So there's a nice little plastic on there, right?
I call it egg stuff, but that's
egg
okay.
stuff, there right. we go.
So egg substitute, yep.
So it's a wax-coated cardboard, you know, container with a plastic on there. And Susan's
so here's what I do. I take apart the cardboard box. It's like an old milk carton. And then the spout is this piece of plastic. I believe it's polypropylene. And which is a fairly quality plastic, right, Susan? I tear it apart and I put it in the bin. And frankly, until I started doing this program, this story, and an earlier one for the Boston Globe, I didn't realize that little spout, which is about 1 inch diameter, is going where, Susan?
Yeah, I'm not so sure that the polypropylene would end up in the polypropylene stream because it's so small. There's a lot of size separation that happens at material recovery facilities, and so it's possible that it will end up with the glass, and it's just going to contaminate the glass stream. The small items tend to do that.
What else do you have there, Jamie?
So we have a, it's a sunflower butter. You know, sunflower is grown in North Dakota and Minnesota, so we like to support that. But we have, what there are is there are two types of resins here. We have, looks like a maybe a polypro lid and, I don't know, I think it's a PET bottle. I can look at the number. But again, it's two resins, a different top and bottom. So that's another. And then we've got, what do we have here? This is another a PET container for some mint that we had. And, you know, honestly, some of this is wish cycling, I think. It becomes very unclear.
Wish as in wishful thinking?
Yeah, 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 exactly. And then we've got some aluminum cans, which are, you know, there's a lot of value in here. So those are going to be taken care of.
All right. So, Susan, some of your institute's activities include, you say collaboration, actually, in your vision statement, between people and companies to assure that no material is wasted. So have you been successful at getting companies to make things not like that egg substitute garden?
I wish I could say I was seeing more of that happening. Here's the good and the bad.
Even one success story would be great, yes.
Yeah. Well, I think we were successful at getting one packaging change several years ago, and a box of oatmeal packets that had a plastic window so that you could see through the box and into the packets. And we had some communications with the company, and the box was turned back into just a regular cardboard-ish box. The bad is that we can't even keep up with it. There are so many new packages that come out because innovation is so valued. And so the marketing urge is really strong to make a new type of package that will stand out on the shelf. And so we keep seeing new things come up and we look at them and go, oh no, that's another example of mixing two material types in one package and rendering some of that package non-recyclable. However, on the good side, in the last 12 months, we have seen more major announcements from major corporations saying that they aim by a certain date to make all of their packaging recyclable. So we have seen this issue elevated to the top levels of corporations where they're making these public announcements and issuing press releases. So we're hopeful that collaboration in the future will render all packaging truly recyclable.
Well, that's a nice cheerful note. But before we end on that, I do want to take another one that is, I think, unequivocally the villain, styrofoam. Nobody recycles styrofoam, right? You're not going to, if you're a recycler, make any money recycling styrofoam.
Well, especially expanded polystyrene. There's two different types of polystyrene. The one that's in those styrofoam clamshells that you're talking about, which is styrofoam's right. A brand name. It really crumbles apart, so it's really not a good thing to put in any recycling bin that has single stream recycling because little bits of the styrofoam will end up in everything. And it is one of the most expensive things to recycle in that type of a system because it weighs almost nothing. So the cost per ton of recycling it is, it makes it one of the most expensive items to recycle on a cost per ton basis.
Right. And the good polystyrene, I would add, is what you would find in a CD case. It's a kind of brittle, heavier plastic. Density has a lot to do with the value of plastics, I understand.
Absolutely.
Right. So, Jamie, you've got this anti-styrofoam thing. How are you doing? Are you going to win the battle?
Well, it's, you know, I think it depends how you define a win, right? Clearly, this product, a styrofoam to-go container, styrene is a carcinogen. The American Academy of Pediatrics warns against having food contact with styrofoam. In Duluth, we have almost 1,500 citizens that are advocating for city council to pass this ordinance on bag straws and to-go containers. That's equivalent of a national petition of 5 million people. At some point, it's going to have to happen, whether here or nationally. We just believe Duluth on the lake, and I think our citizenry in Duluth is just hungry for some change.
How about on the Wisconsin side of the bay?
We have this film, Bag It. I know there's an upcoming presentation at the school, and I think it's a rotary showing the film, and it's eye-opening.
In Superior.
Right, both okay. of those in Superior, yep.
So let me make a suggestion. Why don't you just take the counselors, it could be Superior, Duluth, wherever you want, out for a cup of coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. You order the small, which is in the paper cup, and have them drink out of the medium or large, which is styrofoam, and see who has better coffee.
Well, it's an interesting, you know, for me.
Duncan, to their defense, Duncan says they're going to go all paper.
Yeah, exactly. So, Duncan has announced that they're moving away from styrofoam, I think, at the end of next year. And so, you know, a number of the restaurants in town have stopped using styrofoam to-go containers. They just don't like legislation. So what we're advocating for is not to spank the leaders, right? It's to bring up those behind. And we're advocating for a phase-in in a year and a half or so. So there's ample time for those a business they're still using styrofoam to find those alternatives. And so I think we'll get there.
Susan, what do you think? Will we get there?
I think we will get there. We have to get there. I see the world changing more quickly than I ever have. With respect to container deposit laws, at the beginning of 2018, there were 300 million people around the world who were covered by container deposit laws. And now there are 600 million around the world. And we saw a doubling of the coverage of container deposit laws in 1 year.
All right. So instead of taking my 10-cent bottles to Michigan, I will take my 5-cent bag to Target. Thank you so much, Jamie Harvey and Susan Collins of the Container Recycling Institute. Jamie Harvey of Bag It Duluth. This is Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. So let's say you've got your canvas bags and permanent drinking straws, but you still have stuff to recycle. Are you putting it in the right bin? And does it matter? Joining me now are Karen Anderson of the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, which is responsible for providing wastewater treatment and solid waste oversight for a 530-square-mile area of northeastern Minnesota, and Dusty Johnson, Facilities Manager of the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Welcome, Karen and Dusty.
Thank you.
So, first for Dusty, because I have to ask, is Dusty your real name?
Yes, my real name is Dustin, yes.
So, okay, well, beyond cleaning up and taking away all our stuff, the main gist of this conversation is what happens to our stuff. So, what do we do here at UWS?
At UWS, we have our waste stream set up between two different companies, and the garbage is handled by one company. And then the recyclables are handled by another. And what we do on campus here is we do have cardboard dumpsters that are set up at several different buildings. And then we do larger 96-gallon containers that we change out at a weekly basis. And then we collect the recycling out of the buildings, and that goes into those containers back up to the service center, and it's collected there.
Okay. Well, I want to come back to that, exactly how it works. Karen, tell us the many things that you recycle at WLSSD.
Okay. Well, WLSSD actually does not receive the recyclables, generally speaking, from curbsides. What we do is
that's picked up by whoever you have as a provider on the Duluth side of the bay.
Right, yeah. And on the Superior side of the bay. I am a Superior resident. We are fortunate enough in the more populated areas to have curbside collection of our recyclables. And so our waste haulers are the ones who tell us what kinds of things are recyclable given the business that they have and their ability to market those kinds of materials that we put into the containers. If you were to live in more of a rural area, you would have drop sites available to you. WLSSD collects recyclables only at the facility called the Materials Recovery Center.
One of my favorite places.
It is fantastic, and people love it, up on Rice Lake Road near the airport in Duluth.
Except I'm always going to the wrong one. And then I find out the hours are different.
Not very different any longer.
So what sort of things? Yeah, what are the larger quantities or the things that the curbside people don't take that we bring out to you?
Well, at the Materials Recovery Center, the whole purpose of that facility is to recover as much valuable resources from waste as we can. WLSSD is trying to change a bit of the model, and really the industry is changing the way that we educate people about what is and is not recyclable. And think of it this way. Jugs, tubs, jars, bottles, things that used to contain food, rather than saying number one and number two and number three. All of those numbers really aren't about the recyclability of those products. It's more about the kind of plastic resin that container is made from.
And that, by the way, is a bit of misinformation, right? Or it isn't misinformation, but misused information, because
correct.
Consumers are looking at the one, the three, the whatever it is,
right.
and thinking, well, first of all, they see the triangle. They go, oh, okay, I can recycle it.
Right. And
not
that's,
necessarily.
And
so.
Those chasing arrows around the number don't necessarily mean recycling. Exactly. It's really some part of the plastics industry and how they've kind of marked what kind of resin they have used to make that container. But a great example is you might say, oh, number three, my recycling hauler takes all plastics 1 through 7. Number three is PVC.
Polyvinyl chloride.
Correct. And you can't throw a PVC pipe into your recycle bin, but that's also made out of that same kind of plastic. And that's why the education industry has said it was really convenient to get people to flip over the container and think of those chasing numbers in the chasing arrows as a recyclable symbol, but it's not. And that's really why we're kind of starting to change people's thinking and saying, start thinking about the shapes.
So
it's jugs,
you've got the
tubs,
floor here.
Jars.
I want Dusty to jump in a minute,
yes.
But what would you like to see? What would you put on to say recycle this way, not this way?
Well, you know, I guess I haven't really thought of it that way, but what I can tell you is that I really admire how more of the manufacturers are taking on the responsibility of saying, please recycle this container. And that's not on the bottom, but on the side, and starting to teach people that these different shapes and these different items that they are consuming and buying and purchasing are recyclable. And that's, you'll see Coca-Cola products say that, and some of the water bottles. But if you ask Karen Anderson, what she would like to see is for people to learn a lot about avoiding the purchase of those single-use containers.
Use
your
own
in the first place. Because it's not a free pass just because you're throwing it into the recycle bin. Think about it in the first place and say, I should be carrying a water bottle with me instead of purchasing all of these bottles of water, things
like
that.
Not to mention your own coffee cup for Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts or wherever you want to go, right?
That
and get
right.
a discount.
There's
some
a lot of
it.
Different ways, even reusable straws. I mean, there are lots and lots of good alternatives if you just start to think about it.
Karen talked about education. You're at a university, Dusty, so it should be easy. You got different types of bins. What are you trying to accomplish, and how well are students and faculty members and staff abiding by it?
Pretty good. Generally speaking, as long as you have containers available, readily available, so people don't have to walk too far to put the garbage or the recycling into the proper area. We're working to try and get more and more recycling bins all the way across campus. It doesn't need to be separated bins. It's a mixed stream that is collected on campus. So just having a blue bin in a space rather than just the garbage receptacle is one of the biggest things that we have.
So you walked yourself into the gotcha question. I mean, can you imagine this guy like works with me, he's a colleague here, and I got a gotcha on him, right? But okay, here's the gotcha. And I'm going to take you out in the hall, and you're going to explain this. You've got some bins out there that say plastic, that say paper, and then trash. But you just, did he not say, we have a witness here, Karen, right? Did he not
yes.
say single stream?
Yep.
So are they actually being separated? Are those plastics actually going one plastic place in a paper, one paper place? Or are they ending up in one stream as they go to the recycling?
They're ending up in one stream as they're going to the recycling. So one of the things is when we purchase these bins, the earlier ones that we were purchasing, they're made out of the recycled milk jugs, and they're really nice containers. But that's how they come. They come with all of these different dividers in them, and there's less and less of them that we can find that are just a single stream. We're trying to get more of those on campus so it's less confusing for everybody. But some of them, that's just the way they came. And so when we get those bags, we do end up putting them into the same containers, and they are a mixed stream when they go out.
But there is, I don't know if I want to say a movement, but I'm hearing some rumblings saying, you know, single stream isn't that great of a thing. A lot of contamination is happening. And so is there some benefit in continuing your multi-streams right now, even if it's just for decoration, so that when you do have a multiple stream come up again? Karen's raising her hands here, so I think she wants to take your bottles off of your hands.
Oh, I think it would be great.
Other words, don't stop. In fact, if you are on the UWS campus and you've listened to anything we said in the last few minutes, ignore it. He actually separates all this stuff. It all gets wonderfully recycled, right?
If that's the route that things start to go, we'll do whatever we need to do. It's definitely, if it's a situation where that's where the industry is going and we do want things divided up, we can certainly do that as well.
right?
So don't stop.
Don't stop. No.
And if I can add, Robin, the reason that we're in the situation now, I can tell you that I've been in this industry just over 15 years. And when I started educating people about waste and thinking about waste, we did have all of those separated, even down to the color of glass, if you remember that, green glass, brown glass, clear glass. And one of the largest barriers to people recycling is because they didn't know how, and it seemed too hard. And so at one point, when the industry did go to single-stream recycling, they thought it was great. And it doesn't matter that we get some non-recyclables mixed in.
They didn't think it mattered.
They didn't think it mattered at the time because they got so much more recycling. And as we got more and more and more single-stream out there, all of a sudden, we've all been there, standing there in front of our recycle bin, holding something and wondering, is it recyclable? And we say, when in doubt, throw it out, because the situation we are in today is that many of those recyclables were being shipped overseas to China, which was our largest purchaser of recyclables in this country. And now China put a ban on that in the last couple of years because up to 40% of everything they were getting was garbage and not recycling. So now we're in the situation that there's kind of a glut in the market. There are a
lot
fewer
people. Well, except
that
I talked with the Plastics Recyclers Association, who says, actually, the market is wonderful. Plastic is worth money.
It is.
You're throwing money away.
Yes.
Contaminated plastic that has all kinds of junk on it and attached to it in some products that are made in ways that metal and plastic can't easily be separated. They're fused together or whatever. That stuff there's not a demand for. But if you've got some pure, wonderful polypropylene bottle or jug or something like that, somebody wants to reclaim that.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm raising my hand, because there is a lot of talk in the industry about whether or not we should be going back to separating out plastics and separating out glass and all of these things, because right now mixed recyclables is having the tough market.
Dusty, we have some bins right outside our studio offices here. What do you think of that?
Those are really nice bins. So
it says waste.
Waste, paper, plastic, aluminum, has recycle symbols on the front so it would draw somebody in.
It's pretty hard to pass by this and not know what you're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
That is true.
So what's in here? Or do we need a key or something?
So we actually have paper in the paper. We have a Coke bottle in the plastic. And aluminum cans in the aluminum. Look at that.
You know, we have some really smart students
at
UWS.
That is fantastic.
Let's check the waste and see if somebody threw everything in here. Oh, looking pretty clean.
That looks like garbage.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Great. Well, this was a blind taste test, if there ever was one, in UWS passed.
Fantastic.
Gets an A for the day.
We've been talking to Karen Anderson of the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District and Dusty Johnson, Director of Facilities Management at the University of Wisconsin-Superior.
Thank you.
For Earth Day, they brought their pottery and music, gemstones and paintings. And there were free plants and fuzzy spring willow buds. And throughout the grand hall, the lilting sounds of conversation. Friends meeting old friends, friends making new acquaintances, stories of flesh and clay. All the earth has brought forth in its eons of conversation with sun and stars and hope.
That's Duluth Poet Laureate Gary Bohauer with an untitled poem for Earth Day, written on the spot at the Duluth Art Institute celebration last weekend. Earth Day was celebrated internationally on Monday, yet its roots go back to Wisconsin and the late Senator Gaylord Nelson, who established the observance as a national teach-in in 1970. He was long committed to the environment, earlier hoping to inspire the nation by enlisting the support of President John F. Kennedy. Nelson brought Kennedy to the Apostle Islands in September 1963, one of the president's last trips before he was killed. Kennedy was impressed by what he saw.
Governor Reynolds, Senator Nelson, Secretary Freeman, Secretary Udall, ladies and gentlemen, I am glad to be back in northern Wisconsin. I am, I think, the second president of the United States to spend the night in Ashland. Calvin Coolidge was here for some weeks, some days, but he never said a word. And I was here for one night and spoke all the time. In any case, I appreciate very much your coming out and welcoming us back. This trip, which is a conservation trip across the United States, came about as a result of a suggestion by your junior senator, Gaylord Nelson, who made conservation his great work as the governor of Wisconsin and has had a strong conviction as senator, as do I, that every day that goes by, that we do not make a real national effort to preserve our national conservation resources is a day wasted. Anyone who flies over those islands, as we just did, looks at that long beach, looks at those marshes, looks at what a tremendous natural resource this can be and is now for nearly 50 million Americans who will live in this section of the United States in the coming years, must realize how significant this occasion is. And what we are doing here, which is concentrating the attention of the people of the country on this great natural resource, must be duplicated in every state of the Union, all the way from Massachusetts to Hawaii, if we're going to make this country as good a place to live in for our children as it has been for us. So I'm glad to come to this section of the country, which has experienced so many economic hardships, which has lived so close to nature, which has understood the importance of preserving this resource for many years, and come here and tell you that we, with you in this state and with your governor, will work closely to develop the resources of northern Wisconsin so that this area can rise and provide a life for its people and an attraction for people from all over the Middle West. This state has seen the result of waste and indifference, and it's seen what can be done by dedication and determination. This section of Wisconsin, like other sections of the United States, which in the past depended upon a few natural resources, have known what economic distress can do when those resources are exhausted or when indifference lays them waste. We are seeking to help correct those conditions through area redevelopment programs, through conservation programs, rural area development programs, and increased fisheries research. These things won't happen. They're going to be made to happen. And they must represent the dedicated effort of us all. And I believe we have the brightest hopes in this section of Wisconsin for the development of outdoor recreation facilities. If properly developed, recreational activities and new national park, forests, and recreation areas can bolster your economy and provide pleasure for millions of people in the days to come. If we do what is right now, in 1963, we must set aside substantial areas of our country for all the people who are going to live in it by the year 2000. Where 180 million Americans now live, by the year 2000, there will be 350 million of them. And we have to provide for them, as Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt and the others provided for us. The precise manner in which these resources are used, land and water, is of the greatest importance. There is need for comprehensive local, state, regional, and national planning. I think we're fortunate that in this state government, in this state, because of Gaylord's work and because of John Reynolds' work, you've already made a detailed study of the resource development potential of the south shore of Lake Superior. Wisconsin is the first state in the nation to prepare a comprehensive plan for the development of its resources. You're also fortunate in having underway a $50 million program for acquiring recreational resources. Unless you do this in your state, all these resources will be wasted away, will be used by a few, will be underdeveloped, and this area of the state will fall behind. In an effort to correct this, improve it, develop it, enrich it, I pledge you the cooperation of the federal government.
Lake Superior, the Apostle Islands, the Bad River area are all unique. They are worth improving for the benefit of sportsmen and tourists. In an area of congestion and pollution, man-made noise and dirt, Lake Superior has a beauty that millions can enjoy. These islands are part of our American heritage. In a very real sense, they tell the story of the development of this country. The vast marshes of the Bad River are a rich resource, providing a home for a tremendous number and varied number of wild animals. In fact, the entire northern Great Lakes area, with its vast inland sea, its 27,000 lakes, and thousands of streams, is a central and significant part of the freshwater assets of this country, and we must act to preserve these assets.
President John F. Kennedy at the Ashland Airport on September 24, 1963, less than 2 months before his death. This is Hear Me Out. That's the music of Tracy Nelson, another Wisconsin native associated with the environment, and no relation to Gaylord. Welcome back to Hear Me Out. I'm Robin Washington. WPR reporter Danielle Kading joins me with a look back at some of the news in our area this week. Danny?
Thanks, Robin. The U.S. Chemical Safety Board is calling on the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to revisit a 1993 study on hydrofluoric acid. The request comes in the wake of the explosion and series of fires at Superior's Husky Energy oil refinery last year. The board's interim executive, Kristen Kulinowski, says the EPA should examine existing regulations and risk management procedures for using the toxic chemical.
And we'd also like them to examine the possibility of replacing this material with inherently safer alkylation technologies, which are now coming online and being tested in some facilities around the country.
A tank holding hydrogen fluoride was not compromised in the explosion and fires at the Superior refinery. A Husky spokesman says the refinery has safely used HF for almost 60 years. He adds the company plans to update and add more safety features going forward. An EPA spokeswoman says the agency is reviewing the board's request. Charges have been dismissed against several current and former members of one Northern Wisconsin school board. Three Mercer school board members were accused of misconduct in office, and two former members were charged with falsely acting as public officials. A criminal complaint filed in Iron County Circuit Court this month said the Mercer School Board sent a letter to the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction last May to explain questions that came up from an audit. Deanna Pierpont, Denise Thompson, Michelle Holmstrom, Colleen Kohagi, and Noel Brandt all signed the letter. The five faced felony charges because only three were school board members at the time the letter was signed. Attorney Jim McKenzie represented Thompson, Pierpont, and Kohagi.
What was stated in the probable cause portion of the complaint did not add up to the elements necessary to establish those crimes.
Former school board member Krista Reinert says she's dismayed charges were dismissed, especially one that the former school board president erased a video of a contentious public meeting.
So it's my understanding that once it's been recorded, it's public information. It's a document of a public meeting.
An Iron County judge dismissed all the charges on Monday. UW-Superior and Douglas County hosted the 6th annual Veterans Expo this week. The event featured more than 60 local, state, and federal agencies that provide services and benefits to veterans. Monty Stewart is the Student Services Coordinator for the university's Veteran and Non-Traditional Student Center. He says veterans on campus and within the community often struggle with the transition from military to civilian life.
Events like this are really great because they create those community connections. You can connect with other organizations, other veterans, ways to get involved.
Duluth resident Lori Roberts was among those at the Veterans Expo on Tuesday. She served in the U.S. Army as a diesel mechanic that worked on Jeeps, 10-ton trucks, and tanks. Roberts thinks safety and mobility are some of the biggest challenges facing veterans.
We have too many veterans that are living on the streets, and we have too many veterans that are in their homes and can't get around as well as they used to.
Roberts would like to see more resources to help disabled veterans. Governor Tony Evers' budget proposal would provide $16 million to the Veterans Trust Fund in 2021. Democratic State Senator Janet Buley of Mason said the fund provides the most essential benefits and resources to the 360,000 veterans living in Wisconsin.
We definitely must put into the Veterans Trust Fund the resources that we need so that we can deliver services to veterans exactly when and where they need them.
Lawmakers have used millions of dollars in surplus money from state veterans' homes over the past decade to support the Veterans Trust Fund. The governor proposes using money from the state's general fund to support the trust account, which provides job training, transportation, and other services to veterans. And an Iowa-based outfit is planning to build a $20 million large-scale farm for up to 26,000 hogs in northern Wisconsin. The Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation, or CAFO, would be located in the town of Trade Lake near a tributary of the St. Croix River. Jeffrey Sauer of Thorpe says he's working with Iowa-based Suaday Health and Production on the proposed farm. Sauer says they want to diversify and support the region's dwindling egg economy.
I'm a believer that Wisconsin is an agricultural community, and if we don't fight to keep it and we don't fight to grow it, it's going to fall by the wayside. Northern Wisconsin is going to fall off first.
But Trade Lake resident Frederick Painter isn't rolling out the welcome mat. He says he would like to see the town and county pass a one-year moratorium on new large-scale farms.
I think that they're going to actually have to go to the DNR and protest long and loud and explain that this is a lakes region, this is a tourist region.
Painter says people are concerned about the water quality of their wells. Supporters say it would create jobs and help sustain farms in the area.
Okay. Now, you know, there was a concern about how many pigs were actually going to be involved here. Danny, did you say 26,000 hogs?
I did.
Or did you say 26 sows and hogs?
Nope. 26,000 hogs.
Well, I want to make sure we have that clearly enunciated because not everybody has. Apparently, there was a newspaper in Australia, the Rockhampton Morning Bulletin, this is a little while ago, January 6, 2011, that had a report about 30,000 pigs floating down the Dawson River. I'm sure it's a wonderful river. I've never been there.
Oh,
it turns out they meant to say 30 sows and pigs.
That's a big difference.
So I want to make sure we're right about what's going to happen up here.
Yeah, 26,000.
Thank you. We got that.
No problem, Robert.
All right. Okay, we got that straight. Anything else going on here?
Well, the Friends of the Apostle Islands and the Bayfield Chamber of Commerce held a welcoming reception on Wednesday for the new superintendent of the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. Lynn Domini takes over after former Superintendent Bob Krummenacker took a position as superintendent of Big Bend National Park in West Texas. Domini served for 9 years as the chief of interpretation and education at Acadia National Park in Maine. She has also worked at other national parks, including Point Reyes National Seashore in California, Bandelier National Monument in New Mexico, and Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona.
Now, that is an impressive resume.
It sure is.
Which would be fitting for somebody following in the footsteps of John F. Kennedy.
Definitely.
You know, there's a lot of good federal stuff going on here, which leads into the last report, which I have for you.
Okay.
There's a federal grant going on right now funding the testing of battery-powered electric buses in Duluth Superior, which other agencies, transit agencies, are looking at around the country.
Cool.
If you happen to catch the number 16 bus from Superior to the Duluth Transit Center, you may have noticed a few differences.
It's pretty nice. They're very roomy. They're a lot different than the old buses.
DTA rider Dane Torgerson says he first saw the new buses a few weeks ago. But the main difference isn't the sleek design or added space, but the battery powering its engine. The DTA is testing 7 battery-powered buses for the Federal Transit Administration. Duluth Transit Authority General Manager Bill Pumphrey says the city was chosen because
our extreme cold climate that we have in the winter, where it gets very cold, it lasts a very long time.
That included 20 below more than once this season, though Pumphrey says the coldest they ran the buses was 6 above. Like your car or a flashlight, the length of a battery charge varies depending on temperature.
I just saw some statistics at about 15 degrees temperature. We're getting about six and a half hours out of that may go up.
It takes an hour more than that to charge the battery, which is done overnight. Another reason the twin ports were chosen is the topography. Duluth is built on a hillside rising 700 feet above Lake Superior. That elevation challenge led to the buses being pulled for an adjustment.
It's called a hill hold feature when you stop on an incline, and we have inclines of 9% around here. If the bus starts rolling back, you've got to stop it. You don't want it to slide back into cars behind you.
Made by Proterra Corporation of South Carolina, the buses do use some diesel fuel to operate the heating system so that the battery isn't overtaxed. It's pretty much the opposite of your car. The riders in Superior and Duluth aren't the only ones taking note of the Twin Ports buses.
We're waiting for someone manufacturing electric buses at scale that can handle the demands of Boston and Greater Boston weather.
Steve Poftak is general manager of Boston's MBTA, which is expecting its first battery bus this month, made by New Flyer Corporation of St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Battery-powered buses is a technology that we're looking at. You know, we have decided we are not going to purchase any more diesel buses.
One bus route on which the MBTA is looking to deploy the battery buses is the Silver Line, which currently uses a diesel-electric bus to go under Boston Harbor to the airport. The trip includes a stop to switch from the diesel motor to raise or lower a trolley pole.
At Silver Line Way, you will hear the bus's engine shut off for just a moment while it converts to diesel power for the rest of the trip to Logan Airport.
It only takes about 30 seconds to lower the electric trolley poles and switch on the diesel engine, so you probably won't miss your flight.
I think the thing that matters most to me would be pollution. So pollution and efficiency.
Silver Line rider Kirsten Rapp endorses an emissions-free Boston, but cautions that making batteries means creating pollution somewhere.
Well, it's like anything with electric vehicles. You want to reduce pollution everywhere, not just locally, right? So,
half a continent away, DTA rider Jeremy Roach of Superior shared a similar sentiment.
It saves on the environment, saves on the cost. It's good.
They're actually more expensive. They're quite a bit more than regular buses.
Well, sometimes you got to pay a little bit more to get better at the end. That's the way it is.
His most immediate concern, it was right on time.
Oh, here it is.
There it is.
Yeah, see the difference?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that one before. It is actually very quiet.
So quiet, you'll have to remember to watch for it. That's it for this week's show. Hear Me Out is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Robin Washington. Have a great week.
Let's ride the magic bus. I'm too wish to cause no fuss. Let's ride the magic bus.
Can I buy your magic bus, mister?
Let's ride the magic bus. Ooh.